Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What's up, people? Happy start to the NBA season week here on the Awful Announcing Podcast, which is presented by Breaking Tea. My name is Ben Heisler. It's good to be back with you all, and I'm thrilled for our featured guest today. She is Turner Sports' Allie LaForce. She's kind enough to join us, one of their top NBA reporters. She just came over in the summer. She'll be a part of Turner's NCAA coverage as well. And of course, you've seen her for many years over with CBS Sports as their top reporter for college football as part of their SEC coverage. Really a blast to talk to. Got into a whole lot too, dove into her start in broadcasting. A really cool connection with her family into her current career. The first time she ever totally got starstruck in an interview, that was a fun story. And of course, her husband is playing in a playoff game on Thursday night for the Houston Astros while she will be working Bulls Sixers for TNT. So was curious to know who's going to be feeding her the scores, who's giving the updates, whether Kevin Harlan might drop some knowledge on her in the middle of the broadcast. By the way, the Sixers might put up like 130 points on the Bulls on Thursday, no joke. Defense, by the way, I don't know if you guys know this, is considered optional this year in Chicago. So anyway, Allie LaForce, really engaging, really fun to talk to, and I'm looking forward to bringing you guys our conversation. But before we get to Allie, there is a sweet deal for listeners of the Awful Announcing Podcast. If you go to Breaking Tea, that is the letter T, BreakingTea.com, Awful Announcing Podcast listeners can receive 20% off their purchase. All you have to do is go to BreakingTea.com, use the code AAPOD, that's A-A-P-O-D, all one word. And all of us are big fans of Breaking Tea here at Awful Announcing. They help fans connect to the players and teams they love by memorializing the best moments in sports with fun, clever t-shirts all in real time. At Breaking Tea, they're documenting history one shirt at a time. Also, don't forget, you can follow us at Awful Announcing on Twitter. If you want to follow me, you can do so at Benny Heiss. And please do visit awfulannouncing.com. There's latest news, articles, commentary, and much, much more from some of the best writers and minds in sports media. And then last but not least, you guys heard me mention it last time on the podcast. If you do enjoy the show, or maybe this is your first time finding us, please take a quick second. It would mean a whole heck of a lot to us. To let us know your thoughts on the show, and you can do that over in Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Anchor, really wherever you find our show and our podcast. If you would take a quick moment to rate and review the show so more people can find the Awful Announcing Podcast. That can also be if there's any future guests that you'd like us to reach out to. Whatever feedback you have, we're certainly willing to listen. So please take those quick moments to rate and review the pod. It really does mean a lot to us. All right, those are the propers. Here we go, my conversation with Turner Sports' Allie LaForce. Enjoy. I guess before I get started, do you have a plan of attack for Thursday night? You're going to be working Bulls and Sixers. Is there a plan in place on who's going to be feeding you scores from the Astros game? Do you have a full-on strategy prepared?
It's so funny when it comes to me working full-time and then Joe being in the postseason, which he, you know, it's interesting because he went about 9 or 10 years in his career where he never got to win a playoff game. And the last 3 years, we've been on all playoff teams, traded to the Cubs when the year that they won. And then, you know, last year we were in Toronto and we went to Cleveland and they were a playoff team and now we're with Houston. So it's something that I'm still getting used to, but it's certainly, there's the selfish part of me that thinks, oh, well, if we could just extend this one more game in the series, I'll be able to be there when they clinch. And then you think, are you crazy? Why would you want the other team to win even one game? Don't be thinking so selfishly, but I really want to be there to spray champagne on Joe. It's not every year that you get to be a part of this. So there's definitely the battle in my head, but I think the bottom line is I want them to win as quickly as possible, despite the fact that I might not be able to be there. So yeah, I'll have everything pulled up on my computer. I'll be checking in and out, and then my family members are locked in too, so they'll be texting me updates so I can stay focused on my game.
Yeah, perfect. I don't think that's selfish at all. I remember there was an opportunity where I had a chance to come in from Kansas City to see the Cubs play in 2016. I think it was for that game six against the Dodgers.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, you know, I was hoping that somehow the series would be able to continue as well. So I think you're perfectly in the right there just to be able to say, I want to be there to experience that moment.
good. It's human nature, I think.
I think 100%. So much to talk to you about, and I'm curious to sort of start early on. You grew up in, and please tell me if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly, is it Vermilion, Ohio?
It is, yeah, you nailed it, Vermilion.
Okay, and so from an early age, I read that you were always insanely competitive, and a lot of that sort of came against your siblings. And I'm curious sort of what those early battles were like growing up in Ohio with this fun family, and did those sibling rivalries lead you to basketball in particular?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's all about how you're raised. And for me, family is everything. And they're a huge part of why I am who I am. And they continue to challenge me every day. And I just love them so much. And I grew up in a household with three of us, two siblings, a brother who was just a year younger than me. And he was an incredible athlete. So very competitive with him. And then a sister who was 5 years younger. And kind of the long story short of my family is we are all over the map in terms of our upbringing. My mom is one of six kids that grew up on a dairy farm in Ohio, and only two of them got to go to college. She was one of them. So she went to Kent State and played tennis and was a cheerleader there. And when she was at Kent State, she got a flyer in the mail to try out for Miss Ohio. So she went for it, did Miss Ohio, won. And then she got a job offer to own a modeling agency in Houston, believe it or not. She took it, and she's owned that modeling agency. It's now in Atlanta, but she's owned it for over 30 years and has commuted back and forth from Atlanta and Ohio my entire life. So kind of showed me the example of a really hardworking woman, grew up on a dairy farm, like never missed a day of church, never missed a day of school, never missed a day of milking the cows. And now she owns a modeling agency, and it's just wild. And then my dad is this amazing, big-hearted man from Ohio who played college football at Wittenberg, Division III, and won a national championship with them. And so since my parents both traveled for work a lot, because my dad was in sales, my mom had her sister move in, and she was a varsity basketball coach. So we, you know, my mom's teaching me how to do hair and makeup, and my aunt is taking me to every single practice she ever had with her varsity team from the time I was, you know, 4 years old. I was in the court dribbling. And then my dad, just being this big-hearted ultra, you know, competitor, sort of led me into this career path where I fulfilled my dreams of, you know, playing basketball at the college level, which was something my aunt always wanted me to do and I always wanted to do. And then my mom and the beauty side of it sort of comes into play with the TV aspect. So it's interesting how each of us become the person that we are, and it's obviously a makeup of a million different things, but that's sort of the long story short on my family and how I got to where I am in TV and covering basketball.
Yeah, there's so many different directions there that's fascinating, and I didn't even realize the connection that your mom had to the modeling agency, to the early times of Miss Ohio. And when you competed in it, I think it was in 2005, did you almost feel like you had sort of a leg up on the competition, knowing that this was a part of your family's history from the very beginning?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know that it gave me an advantage, and I think I always had this mentality of, I'm just doing this because my mom says it's good for me, and a lot of great things came for her, but I really just want to play basketball. that was kind of where I was at. And so it was really nice because I didn't have this feeling of like, I'm going to fail if I don't win the whole thing. And there's a couple hundred people in every state that compete. And then when you get to the national level, obviously one from every state and the District of Columbia. So your odds aren't exactly in your favor,
right.
But you know, I think after winning Miss Teen USA in 2005, it really prepared me for this job, because for a full year I had to juggle my high school curriculum. I played three varsity sports and I traveled to 25 different states in two different countries at 15 years old in 1 year. So just dealing with travel and change of plans and being a public figure and watching everything you say and learning how to be professional and sort of everyone asking you every day at 15 years old what you want to do with your life. And you having to come up with something really great because you don't want to just say, oh, I don't know, I think I'll go to college and party it up and then maybe get a job. And, you know, I mean, they want to know how you're going to change the world. And they chose you as the leader of your country, in theory, and you're 15 and you're going, what the heck is going on?
That's crazy. So just how it sounds like it kind of forced you to grow up maybe a little bit faster than you had anticipated.
It absolutely did, and in all the best ways, too, only because I had that family keeping me real, keeping me honest, traveling with me, making sure, you know, I was handling it okay. I can see how somebody in that situation would get really lost without a great support system. And so I'm really thankful for that.
Was basketball your first love for all the three different varsity sports that you played? Did you know that for a long time that was going to be the sport that you pursued?
100%. I mean, I had every, do you know those old like felt triangle banners? Or they're not even triangles. They're like the, what are they called? They're like an extended long triangle.
I know what you're talking about. I can't picture it.
Yeah, I had one for every single WNBA team in my room hanging up on the wall. And my aunt would have to break down gold. Yeah,
the pennants.
Pennants. Thank you. Yes. And there was the Cleveland Rockers, which are no longer a WNBA team. But, oh, my gosh, I used to love watching them play. And it was really cool because my mom always used to say, you know, Lisa Leslie is so amazing. You need to watch her because she's this incredible, strong woman who's super classy and feminine. And she also kills it on the basketball court. And she's like the ultimate competitor and super fierce and was the first woman to dunk in a game. And so I really looked up to Lisa Leslie. And then however many years later, I'm at CBS and they start the first, you know, all women national sports show. And Lisa Leslie's my coworker. And I'm just like all googly eyed and just eating up every second of it. So yeah, it was definitely my first love and passion, probably because of my aunt and her being a coach and just bowls hung up everywhere in the room. Like my ceiling was covered with make 25 consecutive free throws before missing or break the all-time scoring record or whatever it was. So every night before I went to bed, you know, I was looking at those. And it's still my passion to this day.
Well, I got a follow up on that, you know, initial meeting with Lisa Leslie. Was she the first professional athlete or professional in sports that maybe kind of shook you a little bit when you had a chance to interview him and talk to him?
Yeah, it wasn't the first, but it was up there. I had this really cool experience in college. So I walked on the team at Ohio University. They're a MAC school. You probably know, but a lot of people don't. So I just like to explain. Small Division I and Mid-American Conference.
Yeah, I was at Indiana when Terry Heppner came from the MAC in Ohio to Indiana, and that was
right.
That was the most excited I've been as an Indiana football fan in a long, long time. And it was such a shame to see him go so quickly, unfortunately. But yes, I absolutely am very familiar with Ohio U.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I got to play at Indiana while we were there too, and that was a really neat experience. But so I had one coach my first year and loved her to death, Sylvia Crawley. She played at North Carolina, and so did one of her assistant coaches, and they were super awesome. But I didn't grow up watching her. Like, I didn't remember watching her play. But then I think we went to the MAC championship. We lost in double overtime, but we had a great season. And so our whole coaching staff left for Boston College. And so our new head coach was Samika Randall, and I flipped out, had a total fan moment, because I went to Tennessee basketball camps growing up.
Sure.
And she was a part of their undefeated team and an All-American, and she was, I mean, I remember watching her play so vividly under Pat Summitt, and Pat Summitt is my hero, and nobody else will ever come close to her in my mind. And so when they announced Samika Randall was our new head coach, I lost it. Like, I was calling my aunt just going, oh my God, what am I supposed to do? How am I going to keep my composure when I meet her for the first time? I don't want to look like a total dork. But she actually sent me a message the other day and said, so proud of you and everything. And it made me really happy. But she was my first geek out moment, like the first celebrity I got to meet and then eventually play for.
There's a lot of cool stories from your time at Ohio. And one of them actually came to light when I was reading about how you got to come back to give a commencement speech for graduation, which sort of in and of itself has to be a surreal moment. But I'd love for you to share that story about your first broadcast that I think would have left a lot of other first-time broadcasters scrambling. And you sort of took the bull by the horns and said, okay, I better get ready for this. What was that story?
Yeah, first of all, I'm so impressed by you and the amount of research you did for this interview. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
So when they asked me to do the commencement speech, I screenshotted it and sent it to my family and said, is this a prank? Because as honored as I was, I couldn't believe, you know, that it was happening so soon. And obviously I was pumped about it, but, yes. So they asked me to do the commencement speech and I was so excited. And I thought, you know what? At your age, don't try to bestow all this wisdom on these kids that are just graduating. Like, you just graduated from college. Not just, but it seems like that. And so just be real with them. Tell stories that make them feel like they're right there with you and just have fun with them. So I remember when I got up there, I told my parents when they were in the stands, I go, oh my gosh, mom and dad, like, I'm on the court. All those 3.5-hour trips from Cleveland you made to see me play when I never made it on the court. I'm finally on the court. And everybody started cracking up. My parents stood up and started screaming and clapping and everything. And it was such a cool moment. And I think the broadcast story you're referring to is, you know, early on in your career, you need to just get reps and make mistakes. And you need to be surrounded by honest people who really want to make you better. And so Tony Castricone was my broadcast partner. He's just an awesome guy and a great broadcaster. And he was bringing me up, and I was a color commentator at the time because it was the year after I stopped playing. So I traveled with the team and did the radio broadcast as the color analyst. And he calls me from Columbus, which is like an hour and a half away, right before the game. And he goes, yeah, sorry, I'm sick. I don't think I'm going to make the broadcast. So the radio equipment's in the station. Go grab the equipment, set everything up, and you're going live in an hour. And you're going to call the game as the play-by-play and the analyst by yourself. And I was freaking out. I didn't know where the cords went or how to test communications or how to, you know, do play-by-play. And I was really comfortable in my analyst role because I just got done playing with that team. So it wasn't really challenging to be an analyst at that point. And he knew that. And he wanted me to make me uncomfortable. And to this day, he says he really was sick, but I know he wasn't. And just getting thrown into the fire like that, I think, is so important early on. It, you know, it really tests you and it makes you view the industry different. So whether it's learning how to shoot camera or learning how to write or edit or be the, you know, play different roles is so valuable in this industry. It makes you respect your coworkers and understand the product as a whole. I mean, but also throughout the course of your career, you're going to have multiple roles most likely. And learning as early as you can is important.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. Just to have sort of that first moment where everything is kind of a scramble. Because once you're so focused on fixing that, then it almost sort of calms you down for everything else that you have to deal with. So to have
really
that
does.
Early on, I would imagine that just was a huge help.
It was, absolutely.
As far as sort of moving along in your career, because, you know, that was an important moment for you to get you into play-by-play and color commentary. And then here you are working your way up, joining CBS and CBS Sports Network. So before we talk about your time there, were there any particular role model figures that, you know, you mentioned Lisa Leslie is somebody that you looked up to in Pat Summitt, but what about people in the actual industry itself that you had a chance to either maybe pick their brain, learn from them? Did anyone stand out in particular for you in those departments?
Yeah, I mean, Tracy Wolfson was amazing when I first signed at CBS. She reached out and was so comforting and had, you know, so much advice for me, especially taking over the SEC, which is a whole different experience in itself than the rest of sports. So she was outstanding. And just like the women on the We Need to Talk show are so unbelievably impressive. Like Leslie Visser, who's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and Andrea Kramer, who's just like the most competitive go-getter I've ever met in my entire life.
She was our last podcast guest, and she was fantastic.
Oh,
so I'm glad
great.
You brought her up.
I need to tune into that. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, she was really inspiring to me. Really inspiring, and I'm sure from talking to her you can get that same feel. But I just don't want to leave anyone out. Hannah Storm always inspired me because I always saw her doing different things, like we were talking about a moment ago,
right.
Hosting a live show, you know, from right on the center court on the desk, or being a sideline reporter, or doing breaking news in the studio. She could kind of do everything with ease. So I always looked up to her for that. Doris Burke, obviously, to this day is just so incredible for how she's pushing the limits and really setting the standard for what it means to be a woman in sports. That was actually, I studied that in school. My minor was in women's studies, and I wrote a thesis on women in sports. And Doris Burke just is the perfect example of how to sort of push the standards and not settle. And I've gotten to meet her a couple times, and she's inspired me a lot. So there's so many strong women in the industry, but those are just a few.
You know what's interesting, too, about Andrea Kramer and the thing that, you know, you and I are right around the same age. I think you're, what, 29, 30?
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
So I'm 30 as well. And one thing that Andrea referred to that just sort of left me stunned, just because of the time that we're living in now, is that when she started at NFL Films in the mid-1980s, that the idea of just sort of going on and working in sports casting and calling games and being a prominent sideline reporter just weren't options. They weren't even considered as like, well, maybe one day I'd like to be that. She just sort of felt like her progression sort of led her down these different roads, and she didn't really know what she wanted to do. You know, 30 something years later, it's remarkable how much the industry has changed for the better. And yet here we are, there's still so many things that need to improve. But even the last 30 something years, the change over in this industry, I think, has been remarkable.
It is remarkable. And it sounds like from the stories that Andrea Kramer and Leslie Visser tell, they were just fighting to survive in the industry.
Exactly.
They wanted access into a locker room so they could have equal interviews as the men, or yeah, just everything, just the way you're treated based on the way you're dressed and how your commentary is looked at differently. And it's certainly changed a lot. And it's fun to hear them not settle either. You know, like
right. They're
proud of the progress, but they also recognize where we need to continue making progress.
What do you think was your biggest challenge as you were working your way up through CBS and ultimately becoming their top sideline reporter for the SEC and for college football?
That's such a good question. So right off the bat, I moved out to California on like 4 days notice for the CBS Sports Network show called Lead Off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an hour every night, just Doug Gottlieb and I. And he's just like an incredible debater. And he is so well-versed and smart in sports, but he's also like one of the smartest, if not the smartest basketball minds that I'd ever talked to. Like, the way he knows the game is so incredible. He, you know, he came up in it with his father and his brother's coaching and everything, and he just was so well versed. And so I think just moving across the country from home after being in local TV and how, you know, having an hour every single night with him, and just it really tested my knowledge and my patience, and first time really being out of the state of Ohio in a place where, you know, I didn't know a lot of people, and Joe and I were dating early on in our relationship and doing long distance. So I remember I had to finish a high school football show in Ohio every Friday night in order to be allowed to get out of my contract and take the CBS job. So I was doing the nightly show in California till 9 p.m. or whatever, Monday through Friday, taking a red eye, or Monday through Thursday, taking a red eye, doing the high school football show Friday, seeing Joe Saturday, and flying back to California Sunday every single week for a couple months right in the beginning, and just, you know, just running on fumes and trying to be the best you can be, and knowing it's the first national stage and everything you say is going to be on YouTube forever was a huge challenge. But you have to know what you need. And I just knew, like, local TV was a great experience, covering the Browns and the Cavs and blah, 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 being by family. But I needed to be on the air every single day and learn and make mistakes and get better and really showcase that I have more to offer than just, you know, a blurb on the sidelines or 30 seconds here, 30 seconds there, like a 2-minute sports report on local TV. And so just taking that, I think just having the faith in yourself and having the awareness of what you need, not necessarily what's comfortable or what you like.
Was there ever another challenge with all the different roles that you had or what, you know, you mentioned Lead Off. That was a show that, you know, got off to a start, but you had different assignments and took on more reporting roles. Like, was it ever frustrating when something started off that didn't last the way that maybe you had anticipated?
Well, I just think life is constantly changing and you'll always have challenges and you'll never have like your perfect scenario. You know, you can get really close to it, or your goal can always try, you know, to get close to your ultimate goal. But I think, what was challenging in the beginning was everything I described from Lead Off, but then also like CBS Sports Network had so many random shows like Professional Bull Riding and US Open of Surfing. And they're like, hey, you're going to host a 30-minute live US Open of Surfing show from Huntington Beach. And I'm like, I don't even know how to say ride a wave. Like, you say like he caught the wave, or he rode that wave really great, or man, he really crushed that wave, or, you know, I had zero idea of what the terminology was. So, but I think being thrown in those uncomfortable situations are really valuable from a career standpoint and just from a refining your skills standpoint and just learning how to be a professional, regardless of what the situation you're thrown into is.
I think you said it might have been in the press release when you joined Turner that covering the NBA and covering basketball, that's been a lifelong dream. Was that pretty much the major selling point to be able to go to Turner full-time, knowing that you had a very good job at CBS, but it almost seemed like this was sort of the pinnacle. Like, this is exactly what you wanted to do.
Yeah, it really was. There was a lot of factors that went into it. You know, covering basketball full time is my dream, and that's my passion. Football was early in my career after the leadoff show. It was such an incredible opportunity that I will forever be grateful to CBS for, because it really took my career to the next level. It gave me the audience that I had worked, you know, up until that point in my career for. It gave me the exposure, and I got to work with the most incredible production crew, with Craig Silver as the producer and Steve Milton as the director, and, you know, really be on the big stage. That's why football was amazing. And just my, you know, my dad played in college, like we talked about earlier. My brother played at Mount Union and won a couple national championships. And so that experience was amazing. Plus, I was delusional, and I thought the Big Ten was like the greatest thing to ever be invented. And
it was
cool. Yeah, I know, right? I know. Yeah, you probably think the same. It was cool to experience just a different culture in football. And so I'm really grateful for that opportunity. But my passion is in basketball. And then, you know, it's just, I wanted more. I want to be in the studio. I want to be an analyst. I want to be doing sidelines. I don't just want to continue doing sidelines and just be complacent. And it's not that, you know, I'm not trying to say anything negative about sidelines. It's just,
It sounded like you were ready for a new challenge to be able to showcase more of your talent.
It's just the challenge. Exactly. It's just the challenge. I mean, talking at 30 seconds at a time, like for your whole rest of your career, is just, it's not fulfilling to me. And in the NBA, like, there's so much more freedom to have conversations. Like, the way their announcers sort of, you know, bring you in as a conversation instead of just a official report that needs to wrap in 20 seconds is really refreshing. And I mean, I love working with Kevin Harlan, for an example, because you do a report and he always has a follow-up question for you because he knows that there's more to it and you have more to offer, and he wants to get you involved as a sideline reporter. And so I'm just pumped about the Turner family and the opportunities that lie ahead there.
Yeah, Kevin's one of the best. He was also a guest on this podcast several months ago, and a great person to talk to along the way. And how cool was it that he got a chance to call a game on Monday night with his daughter?
That is so incredible. I was so pumped for them. I mean, their family's really close, and when they can, they travel together and they try to experience things together. So the fact that they could do it professionally was awesome. And I think the world of Olivia too. I think she does a really great job, and you can tell that his understanding for her position really helps his broadcast crews that he's on, and just the way that he utilizes a sideline reporter. And I'm so happy for them. That's something they'll talk about forever. When they're retired and they're telling their kids and their grandkids about it. So that was really special.
No doubt. And I know you're short on time, so I just have a couple more questions for you. Allie LaForce is kind enough to join us here on the podcast today. So in diving in with your work at Turner, you've gotten a chance to cover Summer League. You've had a lot of conversations with different coaches and players. And I think what I love so much about the NBA now is that this offseason has genuinely become sort of in this different kind of way, just as exciting as the regular season. There's drama, there's chaos, there's this bizarre soap opera feel to it that's really, really fun and unique to the sport because of the personalities that are there. So I'm curious as to what stood out most to you as we head into the start of the season that maybe you're most looking forward to seeing ultimately play out.
What I really love is, and I think you nailed it with the drama of the offseason, and it's not just petty crap drama. Like, what excites me is the fact that Steve Kerr got kicked out of a preseason game and they've won NBA championships. I mean, I saw Luke Walton get teed up during the Lakers' first game at Staples Center. I love that there's passion and ambition this early in the season, especially in the preseason, mainly because there's this stereotype, wrong or right, that, you know, NBA regular season isn't worth watching, which I obviously disagree with. And that, you know, it's two different sports once the playoff comes. But to see the passion this early in the season, I think, is outstanding. And then just that social media has given us this platform to see the personalities. And, like, Mo Bamba and Joel Embiid going back and forth on the trash talking on social media already. And just seeing rookies, too, really express their confidence in themselves. And us getting some insight into the relationships between a LeBron James or a veteran player who embraces or works out with or engages with the rookies on social media too. It's fun to sit back and watch it all happen and just get to know these guys. So I agree with you that it seems like this year more than ever we're connected as the fan, and it should make for a more exciting season.
No doubt. Before I let you go, you're doing amazing work with HelpCure HD, helping out people that are affected by Huntington's disease. Can you just tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing for them?
Oh, bless your heart. I really appreciate when you do things like this, because I know I didn't ask you to talk about it, and I know it's a sports podcast, so I didn't want you to feel obligated to. But so it's something that has really given my husband Joe and I a lot of direction and drive and passion. And his mom, Lee, was diagnosed with Huntington's disease in her mid-40s, and it's a neurological progressive disease, and it's the best way I can describe it is you lose your memory and your motor skills at the same time, pretty rapidly too.
Wow.
It's different for each person, but she's 60 years old and she's in a full-time care facility, and she won't be able to travel to watch him in the postseason or anything anymore, and it's so sad. And what's really, really cool about this disease, and I say cool because each kid has a 50% chance of having it. But once your kid does not have it, they can no longer pass it down the family line ever again. And we know the gene. So what Joe and I are doing is we're raising money to provide funds for families to get IVF done to make sure their kids don't have the gene and eliminate it from the family line forever. That's what's so cool about it. Because it's literally the devil's disease. And there's nothing positive about it. And it's been so devastating to watch his mom go through it and know that it could possibly happen to Joe too. That's on his mind constantly. And it just crushes us. And the fact that we can make sure our kids don't have it and make sure nobody in our family line has it again is so promising. And so we've sort of used that as our hope and our vision for our foundation. So we're really excited about helping families. And we'll take any help we can get. Our website's helpcurehd.com. But yeah, that's kind of the long story short. And thank you so much for asking about it.
Well, thank you for the work that you do. I saw that the Astros had a day to try and help out as well. So that was really cool to see them get on board. And anytime you get the chance to see teams really embrace this type of opportunity is fantastic. Please give her a follow on Twitter at @ALaForce and watch her this upcoming Thursday night and throughout the regular season and postseason as part of TNT's NBA coverage. Ellie, this was a lot of fun. I really appreciate your time and your candor today, and look forward to staying in touch and doing it again soon.
Thanks for having me on. We'll have to do this again soon.